2.5, 3 weeks ago. We were part of an operation to help a couple of ladies escape this. And what happened is a teenage friend of theirs had come to Georgia from a state up north, had been down here for 2 or 3 months, called back to her friends and said, "You've got to come to Atlanta. It's a great place. Everybody's having a good time. It's the weather's wonderful. We just party all the time. You guys would absolutely love it." They said, "Well, we just don't know how we can get down there. We don't have the money." And she says, "It's not a problem. My boyfriend and I will come get you."
Oh, wow.
So they drive up, pick them up, load them up in the car. They're halfway down here. And then the conversation starts to revolve around things like, "Well, you know, I'm happy to help. We're happy to pick you up. But you're going to have to figure out how to pay for some of this. I can't pay for all of it." And then by the time they get back to Atlanta, they're in a hotel room. Ads are posted on the internet, and they're being trafficked and sold for sex.
Wow.
And fortunately, it was already a horrific situation, but fortunately, within about a week or 10 days, they found an opportunity and a moment to escape.
Mm.
They did, and literally ran down the road and walked into a church that they had seen, and the church said, "Sit tight. We'll call Street Grace." And within an hour and a half, we were, you know, sitting, having a meal with them at Waffle House. And then that evening had them in a safe home here in Atlanta. And they have since been returned and back with their families and things like that. But it's this, this the era and age of technology has made so much of this grooming process and so much of the befriending process so much easier, because again, it fosters the anonymity for the traffickers and the buyers of sex.
Hey, welcome to the More Than Money podcast. This is Chris Burns. Thank you so much for joining us. Most of our podcasts are portions of our weekend show that we put out. But at least once a month, we want to put out something that's very different. These are conversations that I have with people that are impacting our community, whether they're impacting it in a very distinctly financial way or something totally different. The reason that we call this More Than Money is that we believe in quality of life, and that the quality of life of our community matters, and that impacts us. Money is just a tool towards having the quality of life, the future that you want. And so this conversation you're about to hear was so impactful to me, and I think is critical, but I'm just going to warn you up front, it's not an easy conversation. I sat down with Bob Rogers. Bob is the CEO of Street Grace, who is a group in Atlanta that's working in Georgia and also working nationally to transform and end child sex trafficking. And if that isn't, when you say that, a lot of people go, "I don't really feel like thinking about that. I don't want to hear that conversation necessarily." And let me just say, I felt a little bit of that walking into the conversation. Sometimes it's easier for me just to avoid things that are challenging. But I'll tell you what, this is no different. It's fascinating to me to see how this correlates with planning. It is so hard for some families to sit down and do financial planning because we don't want to think about bad things that could happen. And so I've worked with a lot of couples where if I start bringing up, "Hey, we want to talk about what would happen if one of you passed away, what would happen if we had a long-term care issue or sickness," and some people really have a hard time talking about that because it's easier just to avoid it. And yet when we look at it, when we stare it in the face and talk about it, that's where we start to have hope. That's where we have peace. That's where we say, you know, we can actually feel confident as we move forward because we're not avoiding this anymore. And child trafficking is an issue. Sexual trafficking is an issue that is in our faces. It's in our city. It's been here for a long time. And finally, more and more light is being shown on the issue, and it's beginning to see change. There is real hope and there is real change. And what Bob showed me, which was surprising, and if you stick around for the conversation and really listen, is that you and I can make a tangible, real difference just by shining light on this issue. A real difference. And I was amazed walking out of this conversation how much I learned about what I could be doing in small and big ways to truly make a difference. And so please, I would ask this, if you start this conversation, follow through on it. Even just hearing Bob's story of how his family and his life was changed is just a remarkable story. Of the impact he's able to have now with his organization that he would never have anticipated a few years ago. And so I just encourage you to listen to this. And as you're listening, there is an event coming up that I want you to know about. We talk about this on the podcast, but it's Georgia's Anti-Sex Trafficking Lobby Day. This is a day, much like the Right to Life March, if you've ever been a part of that, where we can come down as citizens and lobby at the Capitol for an end to this. and lobby at the Capitol for light to be shown on this issue. And it makes such an impact on legislators when they see that people actually care. That is where change happens. So we talk about this on the podcast, but it's a very tangible, real thing that you and I could do to give a few hours of our time to say, this matters to us. We want to see it change. So again, if you want to learn more about that, it's on February 20th. You can go onto Street Grace's website. It's just streetgrace.org. Again, streetgrace.org. But I encourage you more than anything else, whether you come down to the lobby day, just listen to the whole podcast. Hear what is going on. Hear what the challenge is, but stick around to hear how there is hope and change happening in real and tangible ways. I'm so thankful to Bob for giving his time to discuss this. And again, if you have any questions at all as you listen, go to Street Grace's website, streetgrace.org, and they can get you plugged in to learn more about this. Thank you again for taking the time to come out. I think we had two other times scheduled, and the first one was a scheduling issue, and the second one that I don't think I was sick or the family was sick. So here we are. We made it.
Yeah.
And it's still blistering cold outside, but we both showed up.
That's right. Mm.
And I'm going to sip coffee as we go, but so if I have any long pauses, that's my getting into it. But thank you for coming out. Again, the purpose of this is just that I was fascinated when we did our week of updates back at Thanksgiving time. We talked about Street Grace as one of the nonprofits that was doing amazing things. And as I began to read your website and just more of what was going on, I've been kind of peripherally engaged with what you've been doing for a number of years, but not really understanding it. And the more I read the website, the more I was fascinated by exactly what you guys are doing. So I didn't give you much prep coming into this other than just, I want to hear more of your story, but
sure.
But I would just love to know. So you've been with, how long have you been with Street Grace?
Just at a year and a half, started in June of 2016.
Did you ever see yourself leading an organization like this? Has this always been an aspiration for you, or kind of what was the journey that led you to where you are now?
No, it's interesting, and I'll give you the shorter version of it since it's just an hour conversation.
Okay.
I have found myself for a number of years, even mentioning off and on to my wife, Melinda, I hope that at some point in life, I'm at the place where we can spend time and resources focusing on folks who have been victimized by things like this. Mm-hmm. And certainly anything to do with sexual trafficking, sexual exploitation, and any of those, it's horrific to all of us. So there's general consensus on that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how the opportunity would unfold, and I certainly didn't know that I would wind up doing something like this. So mm-hmm. that journey and that process for me has been, it's been invigorating, it's been interesting, but it's certainly not been predictable.
Hmm. Yeah, I'll be honest, even doing this, I even struggled. It was funny, when I was creating that update, because I'm throwing out an update on WSB that's going to go out to thousands of people in their cars, with their kids in the car and everything else. And suddenly I'm going to be talking about something that I'm passionate about that I know, which is, you know, the reality of sex trafficking and even child sex trafficking, both in our city or around the country. Mm-hmm. But I'd never have to think about how do I present this in a way that, you know, the 5-year-old in the car can hear it, but the family needs to hear it. So that's a tension. And even on the website, I appreciated how you guys kind of navigated that tension of saying, this is just an issue. One of the reasons that we don't talk about it a lot is that it's just not a comfortable thing to look at. It's not a comfortable thing to deal with.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, this whole issue of sexual abuse, sexual exploitation, trafficking for children and for adults, it requires this cloak of anonymity. If you don't have that, this doesn't survive. When you pull back and you expose this to light, it goes away. Mm. And so we've bought this this bill of goods probably, you know, 40 or 50 years ago that said, conversations that revolve around sex or sexually related things are improper conversations to have. When in fact, this should be dinner time conversation when the family's sitting around the dinner table, which I know doesn't happen that much anymore.
Yeah.
But these are the kinds of things that we need to be talking about to educate our kids. Age appropriate, yes, but direct, truthful, factual, yes. The truth and the reality of it is, the average age that a child is sexually trafficked or exploited for commercial purposes is the age of 14.
Wow.
The average age that a child sees graphic hardcore pornography is between the ages of 8 and 10.
Wow.
So the mental health professionals and the folks that are in this space have kind of, this is my layman's version of it, but coined this phrase that says, 8 is too late.
Hmm.
So we're not trying to scare our kids. I'm not a defeatist. We haven't lost the fight. But it's critically important that we educate our kids. What is proper touch? What is proper conversations? What to do if someone attempts to make an advance or a touch that would be considered improper, inappropriate? Who to talk to? How to handle that? To refer back to the mental health profession, they will tell you that when an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old, or even adolescent sees pornography today, the graphic, hardcore nature and the degrading nature of it is mental. It in and of itself is mental health trauma, and they don't realize that they've just experienced mental health trauma.
Wow.
So there's nothing more important. There's nothing that a family or a caring or compassionate adult can do for a child in this space and in this arena that's more important than having a conversation. Because if kids don't know what it is, if kids don't know how to articulate it, and if kids don't know how to report it, because they have to understand, and this is challenging, that it's not their fault. They didn't do anything to cause this. It's very difficult for it to surface. And that's the reason this thing lives and thrives in the darkness.
And why in the world is there such a stigma? It's funny. I was reading, it's not funny, but it's just fascinating to me. I was reading an article just yesterday about, you know, this horrific abuse at the hands of the Michigan State doctor who was, the U.S. gymnastics team doctor that apparently abused hundreds of girls. But the crazy thing reading it was that a lot of that abuse happened with the parent in the room, and that if the child expressed concern, the parent sitting there would just basically be talked down by the doctor as he explained this was normal as he's abusing the child.
Right.
And just the fact that there was so little empowerment given, and it's not just in that case. It was just fascinating to me that he could have that length of abuse with other adults kind of knowing and being there, but just because the stigma of talking about it or the stigma of maybe I must not understand it, like the parent wasn't willing to say, I don't feel okay. I know you're saying this is fine, but it's not fine. And I feel like part of that was just the stigma of it, that it's just like, well, I'm not a professional. I guess what he's doing is okay. Or and the kids don't have a voice to speak about that. I don't know. It was totally mind-boggling for me, but
no, but it's sadly, it's correct. I mean, it's the single most unreported crime. Crimes of sexual exploitation and sexual abuse are probably the single most unreported crime, that we wrestle with in this country. I think the statistic is, it's either 12 or 16%, according to the Department of Justice, of rape and cases of sexual exploitation that occur on college and university campuses. That's all that's even reported.
Wow.
And if you look at those when they occur, now I do believe there is a shifting tide. But if you look at those when they occur, and even in earlier days, decades ago, when we were looking at trafficking and those that were being prostituted. And I mean, let's be candid, this is just nothing more than modern day slavery.
Right.
Okay. Anytime something came to surface, how many times have you heard people say, well, what did you do to deserve that? Or where were you at the time? Or why were you there? And instead of being victim centric in the solution, the healing, and the restoration process, we have historically been victim-centric in trying to assign blame and fault. And so that is changing. That's good news. That there's a tipping point that I think is coming with that. And we read and hear about not only that case, but the Harvey Weinsteins and the things that we hear in the news.
Right.
And what happens? As soon as that happens, dozens and dozens and dozens of actors and people that are involved in their career step forward and say, well, I'm not surprised we knew that. And then they realize, oh, so that means I participated. And you hear some of them begin to step back. Well, I knew he was flirtatious, but I didn't know this.
Sure.
I didn't know the extent it went to. So it is. It's a difficult thing.
Yeah. And you guys participate. Well, I mean, I'd love to know, because so many people listening to this are in families. I've got 3 kids and 2 teenage boys now, and then a 3-year-old little girl. But years ago when my kids were really little, I led I taught a class part-time for some middle school kids because I used to work in a church and I was doing youth ministry. So I taught this class, and that's when I was shocked because it was 8th grade boys. And I remember asking them, just candidly, because it was talked about a little bit. It was more being more and more talked about. But I said, how many of you, just by show of hands, were exposed to pornography, prior to this year? All the hands went up. All right. How about prior to sixth grade? Virtually all the hands went up. And it's exactly what you're saying, that the exposure to it has become so young. And yet I, as a parent now, it sounded back then I was very idealistic about saying, so this is how we have to tackle this. But now I, as a parent, realize I don't even know how to keep up with the technology that my kids, and I'm still fairly young, that my kids are already mastering. And I feel like I'm a step behind in every sense. And I know that's not the primary work you're doing. But I totally affirm the reality. What I've kind of embraced is I'll do everything I can to create a safe technology environment for my kids. But just as important, if not more, is having those frank conversations with them and not being scared to dive into it. And so I'm honestly excited that we're having this conversation. I'll probably play this for them just so they can hear more of reality of what's going on, because they are at the age where they can begin to deal with that.
Yeah, and this really does align well with, I mean, kind of... But our three of the tenets that we focus on are this issue of protecting, preventing, and pursuing. Mm. So along the vein of protecting and preventing, I think this, the conversation about technology and about pornography and other exploitive type things is very relevant. I mean, when you talk about, you're not alone. I mean, we will, in 2017, we presented our information to roughly 72,000 people. About 58,000 of them were the age of 18 or below. Hmm. I will tell you, it is statistically valid, I think, to say that 100% of the time when we're having these conversations, it's the adults that are in the room that are the ones that are uncomfortable.
Yeah.
The kids in the room and the teens in the room and the young adults in the room, they all know. Hmm. None of this is a surprise to them. Hmm. Now, some of the stories, some of the things that are associated with it, yes, absolutely are. But the issue that they're struggling with, I mean, if you stop and think about it, I don't know that there's anything that we all have in common more than sexual issues. Hmm. I mean, who hasn't struggled or doesn't struggle with those things through either adolescent and childhood years or even into adulthood? I mean, you hear it and it permeates our culture. The single largest pornographic website in the world, it's just one, but the single largest purveyor of pornography in the world in 2017 had 98 billion visits.
Wow.
98 billion.
Wow.
And so when you kind of do the math on that and you say that's one of, if you're conservative, hundreds of thousands, and if you're probably more accurate, millions of adult websites that are out there. And so this idea of protecting our kids and preventing our kids, again, I want everyone to know I'm not a defeatist on this, but the age and the era of stopping our kids from seeing pornography has passed. Mm. We now have to teach them how to handle this before they become exposed to it, what it is, how to view it, whether you have a faith perspective or whether you don't. How are we viewing people of the opposite sex, and how are we viewing and going to handle our bodies and other bodies from a sexual, what's sexually appropriate perspective? And it's an awkward conversation. I mean, I've had after talks, parents and kids come up, and the parents literally will be having these conversations or asking a question while they are stuttering and wiping sweat off their foreheads.
Right.
And their kids are just wanting to crawl up under a chair. And I'll turn to the kid and say, do you see how difficult this is? This is why, but they care enough to be here and to ask these questions. And oftentimes it leads to a pretty engaging conversation. But but taking the step and crossing the bridge is so difficult, but it's a perceived difficulty.
It is a perceived. I'll never forget a friend of mine in college, a girl that my wife and I were good friends with. We were talking about this stuff, and we were all getting married and things like that. And she said, when she was a kid, she was maybe 6, 7 years old. She said, "Mommy, what's sex?" In the car, one of the unexpected things. And the mom went, "It's your gender, honey." And that was the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
So the child asked, there's this beautiful moment where it could be like beginning the conversation and, it's just your gender, honey. That's what sex is. And then that was it.
Yeah.
Closed it down. Man, that's fascinating. So in terms of what you actually do, because a lot of people have never heard of Street Grace, and I do want to hear more about how you specifically got into it, but how does what Street Grace is doing link to those kind of conversations in the household? I mean, because I know my understanding of Street Grace was You know, we're out trying to actively combat in various ways, you know, sex trafficking. How does that link to a family sitting around the dinner table and talking about these things in an open way? I mean, what is that?
Yeah, great connection? Question, because there's a direct correlation. Doesn't mean it's causal, but there's a direct correlation. Again, if you go back to this prevent, protect, and pursue, the way that we look at that is to prevent the event from ever occurring. This one of the single greatest things that can be done is to educate and give a language and an idea to this for children. Mm. So again, it goes back to the youth initiatives that we have. We're deeply engaged in the faith communities here in Atlanta. We partner with somewhere around 85 to 100 churches.
Wow.
We're engaged in raising awareness and public awareness events with public schools, with private schools, with community groups, with sports teams and things like that. So it's this idea of giving people a framework by which to see, a lens to be able to identify this and say, you know, that awkward or that uncomfortable thing, or that, you know, we were with a group of teachers about a week and a half ago, that kid in the classroom who's acting up, who's giving you fits, who you've just about lost it and you're just done with them, it's worth asking yourself one more question and just looking beneath the surface. Could there be something else that's occurring that's causing this kind of a behavior to manifest itself in the way that it does? Mm. And it's remarkable. I mean, everything doesn't lead back to sexual exploitation. I totally get that. It is remarkable, though, the frequency that somewhere on a journey, there's been some version or some sexual exploitation or abuse or something even more severe that has occurred. Hmm. So from that end of it, with the protect and the prevention, that's a lot of it is education awareness. We have a campaign that does that. It was launched here in the state with former Attorney General Sam Olens, and now the current Attorney General Chris Carr is a tremendous advocate for this. Hmm. I mean, we have a friend, and I mean all of us in the fight against sexual exploitation and trafficking have a friend in our current Attorney General, and he's working hard on legislation and things that will continue to advance the cause. So we have a program called Demand an End. And what that is where we partner with the local states' attorney generals, and we roll out with them in their state a campaign to raise awareness, education, prevention, and things like that. It's a multifaceted campaign. But here in Georgia, we also do that down to the city and municipality level. Right. So there are 25 or 30 cities in the last 12 or 18 months in Georgia that we have gone in and trained the city employees, the county employees.
Wow.
And then the GBI has a magnificent process where which they train and raise awareness and educate officers, law enforcement to law enforcement. And so when you have the community, and when you have the legislators, and when you have law enforcement all talking about this and working together hand in hand, we are far more impactful together. Mm. And so in Georgia, over the last several years especially, we've seen terrific advances. I mean, it was just not too long ago that the penalties and fines for exploiting or trafficking or prostituting a child were just utterly shameful.
Wow.
Now, dependent upon the severity and the age of the child, you could spend 10 to 40 years in prison.
Wow.
It's a felony. You could see penalties and fines of upwards of $100,000. And I think that there are more things that are coming that will make that more severe as we become. It's taken us coming face to face with the horrific nature of this to fully address it. And nothing happens without the community's engagement. And the community has had a chance and an opportunity to learn about this and say, not here.
So what is, again, from someone that's speaking somewhat out of ignorance here, but I think a lot of people listening are, I mean, what is the scope and reality of this issue in our state? And I think an addendum to that is, you know, I live in the suburbs. I wish I could say I was a cool, hip guy that lived down in today. I don't.
Okay? Yeah.
So I live out in the suburbs, but this is not an issue that's confined to somewhere downtown. This is an issue, from what I've understood, that is you could find in little boroughs all over the state. But what is it? I mean, what is the scope of this?
Yeah, this isn't a metropolitan and it's not or a rural issue. It's a both issue.
Hmm.
Let me just preface it all by saying there's not an enormous amount of research that's done around the sex trafficking space. We're getting a body of research that is being built now that is helping us fight the fight. So some of the information and the research that we use is a few years old.
Sure.
But there was a study that was done here in Atlanta that came to the conclusion that the estimates were that the underground sex economy in Atlanta, Georgia, was a $290 million business.
Wow.
So just kind of wrap your head around that for a minute. I know we don't like dead space on the radio, but take a moment and just kind of pause and think, how many transactions at $100 or $150 or $200, $250 a piece does it take on an annual basis to get to $290 million? Mm. And it's just staggering. The Attorney General and some of the other research that's been done says that on average in our city here in this area, and I don't mean just the city limits of Atlanta, I mean metropolitan Atlanta,
yeah.
350 or so kids are bought and sold every night. And somewhere in the neighborhood of 7,000 or 8,000 men are doing those transactions. Now, that's just, we're just talking, you know, at that level at this point.
So 7,000 or 8,000 men are every day on a daily basis?
No, over the course of a month.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's all staggering.
And when you, yeah. And when you say children, we're just saying anyone under the age of 17 here.
17 and under. That's right.
That's being bought and sold in some way. And is this, again, from a lack of understanding, is this, are a lot of these kids domestic, born and bred, you know, mm-hmm. Georgia kids, grew up in the state or grew up in the states, somewhere in the United States? Or are these people that are coming, being brought over country lines? And what does that look like?
No, it's a great question, too. And I'm glad you're asking them because you're hitting some key points. And the answer is yes and.
Wow.
So, yes, there are children and there are adults that are transported across state and even international lines. But the majority of what is occurring is our kids and our communities being bought and sold by members of our community, people that shop where we shop, people mm-hmm. that work where we work, people that sadly attend, you know, churches and synagogues and temples where we attend mm-hmm. on a weekly basis. And so, I mean, we're working with some folks right now that I'm familiar with, one who was actually trafficked by her university professor. We're working with a lady a couple of months ago that as a child was trafficked for 3 years by someone that lived in the subdivision and attended HOA meetings with the family. And according to the statistics here in Georgia from Georgia Cares, 91% of the kids who are trafficked for the first time are involved and enrolled in school. So this isn't just, it is a runaway youth problem. But it's not just a runaway youth problem. It is a homeless issue, but it's not just a homeless issue.
Wow.
And that's what's so hard to wrap our heads around. When I'll talk and do presentations, one of the things that I'll almost always get asked is, what is a trafficker? What does a buyer of sex look like? And what I say, and I'm not being tongue-in-cheek with it or lighthearted, is look to your left and look to your right. That's the hard thing about it. The first time I was in a... got to participate because of the work we do in a sting operation with the GBI and the TBI and Homeland Security. The thing that was, I thought there would be lots of things that would be astonishing to me. But what was the most astonishing and candidly was even a little frightening and eye-opening was the people that walked through the room thinking that they were walking through the door to purchase sex with a minor. I mean, they had responded to an ad, they had picked up the phone call, they had made the financial agreement, and they walked through the door of a hotel or wherever we were to think that they were purchasing sex with a minor, which is a code word for other things that I won't use on the radio.
Yeah.
It is that they looked just like you and I. They looked like they lived in our neighborhood and shopped in our communities. And so it was this revelation that you can't just walk down the street and spot a trafficker. You can't just walk down the street and spot somebody who just purchased sex with an adult or a minor yesterday. Mm. And that's why for me and for us at Street Grace, all roads point back to education from the prevention standpoint.
Wow. And even when you say, because again, it's the language here, it can sometimes be, you know, even the word trafficking and thing, it can, for a quote-unquote normal person running along in their day-to-day life, that just sounds so foreign.
Mm-hmm.
But you're saying it's all around. Like when you talk about someone who it was someone in their cul-de-sac and they were going to school, what does that even mean? Is it literally the person formed a relationship with his youth and said, I'll give you money to do this? Or is it sometimes where the youth has no choice or just a wide variety? I mean, how does that even begin?
Yeah, in all cases for someone 17 and under, and this is good, our federal laws and our governments say that a minor does not even have the capacity to make the decision to willfully be engaged.
It's coercive.
So 100% of the time, whether force, fraud, or coercion can be proven, it's a felony, and they are victimized by this and being prostituted. They are not certainly prostitutes, and they are not people that are choosing to do this. In those situations, it is one of those things where it can, if you think about the gravity of it, in a 12 or 13 or 8 or 15-year-old boy or girl, and an adult in their lives that through coercion, manipulation, has established a relationship with them, healthy or not, that has engendered some level of trust and probably a combination of trust and fear, and then begins to exploit them, and then begins to take it the next step further. A simple illustration of this is just 2.5-3 weeks ago, we were part of an operation to help a couple of ladies escape this. And what happened is a teenage friend of theirs had come to Georgia from a state up north, had been down here for 2 or 3 months, called back to her friends and said, "You've got to come to Atlanta. It's a great place. Everybody's having a good time. The weather's wonderful. We just party all the time. You guys would absolutely love it." They said, "Well, we just don't know how we can get down there. We don't have the money." And she says, "It's not a problem. My boyfriend and I will come get you."
Oh, wow.
So they drive up, pick them up, load them up in the car. They're halfway down here. And then the conversation starts to revolve around things like, "Well, you know, I'm happy to help. We're happy to pick you up. But you're going to have to figure out how to pay for some of this. I can't pay for all of it." And then by the time they get back to Atlanta, they're in a hotel room. Ads are posted on the internet, and they're being trafficked and sold for sex.
Wow!
And fortunately, it was already a horrific situation, but fortunately, within about a week or 10 days, they found an opportunity and a moment to escape. Mm. They did, and literally ran down the road and walked into a church that they had seen, and the church said, "Sit tight. We'll call Street Grace." And within an hour and a half, we were, you know, sitting, having a meal with them at Waffle House. And then that evening had them in a safe home here in Atlanta. And they have since been returned and back with their families and things like that. But it's this, the era and age of technology has made so much of this grooming process and so much of the befriending process so much easier, because again, it fosters the anonymity for the traffickers and the buyers of sex. And they're both traffickers, but we just label them a little bit differently, and that words, those words are still too nice to use, but it's just what we say.
It's what we say.
Yeah.
Man, how many, I think the scary thing for me in this, beyond just the revulsion about the whole issue, is just the reality of it being right there. And if there's that much going on and that amount of money being spent, which is a staggering number, that we just don't see it. I remember I did a, or maybe we do see it, we just don't know what we're seeing, but I did a years and years ago, I took students on a basically a homeless tour of Atlanta. It was an incredibly privilege to, we went down to a place in the city that was an outreach for homeless folks, but there was actually a homeless man who took us on a tour of the city almost through his eyes, and he walked us around and showed us things. And the thing that struck me the most was this was a city I grew up in, a city I'd walked around so much and was regularly involved in.
Right.
And to see it through his eyes, it was suddenly things I never would have noticed that he began pointing out. And it just totally changed my perspective. But it was the city I'd always been in. I just had no idea it was there.
Yeah. And I know I don't know who to assign this quote to, and if I even get it right. But I heard somebody say a week or so ago at a presentation, the eyes can't see what the mind doesn't know.
Yeah.
And so that's part of why education is so important. This morning was at breakfast with a couple of people, and one of them was one of the GBI leaders that we had referenced earlier, who's over the ICAC task force for the state, which is the Internet Crimes Against Children. And I have heard him tell a story about training law enforcement in a particular town in middle Georgia. And after the training session, within 7 days, an officer pulled over a car for was just a routine traffic stop, normally would have thought nothing about it, but saw a young girl in the back seat of a car with an older gentleman. And it could have looked like a father and daughter or a grandfather and a daughter, but he just had a gut check on it. And so he went back to the car, and as he was doing the other stuff, called for someone else. And another officer arrived on the scene, And then he approached them about this, and she was in fact being trafficked.
Wow.
And she was, and so there are stories like that that occur all over the place as soon as people learn to see and know what this is.
Wow.
So it's interesting, and that's why, I mean, candidly, I don't underestimate opportunities like today, just to be able to talk and have a dialogue.
Mm.
And churches and faith communities are responding in a large way.
Mm.
I will say we are all responding late,
mm.
but they are now responding in a very strong way, and churches large and small are getting involved. We have opportunities for them to do that with street teams that go out on weekends into high risk areas and knock on doors and provide, you know, supplies and things like that as they're looking for folks that might need help. And then there's so many other ways that folks can get involved, but it does happen.
Well, that's what I'd love to know is okay, so there's this massive problem. And what you just said is literally that the church called you guys when they had these two girls that were able to escape from this crazy situation. What exactly is Street Grace involved in? It sounds like you're involved both in a level of education, but also you're on the ground doing things. So kind of give us a scope of what you guys do to combat this.
Yeah, one of the things I often lead with is education is doing something.
Sure.
Because folks will explain sometimes, they'll say, oh, so you guys don't do anything.
Right.
And
education, I get that a lot too.
Education is doing something. But again, the piece we haven't talked about is the protect and the prevent and then the pursuit. So in that, some of what we do, if you were to take a real simplistic look at sexual exploitation, commercial sexual exploitation, and domestic minor sex trafficking, and just this linear look, you would say the first third of the line is prevention, protection, education, awareness, anything to stop an event from occurring.
Sure.
And then if you said, okay, from the place for those that something does occur, from that point forward, you're in this rescue or escape or get out of it or get help. And it depends upon how deep you go into it, restoration, restorative care, housing, residential, all of those types of services and restorative care services are that middle block.
Mm.
And then if you take the final third, and that's where we call pursuit. And so that's where we actively are engaged in programs that pursue buyers of sex. We want to see the buyers of sex. We want to see the anonymity lifted. We want to see the buyers of sex get the punishment and the penalties and, candidly, the help that they need. Because sending somebody to prison for 20 years for a sexually deviant behavior is not often the cure for that behavior. So we want them to receive the consequences that they should. That's appropriate, and we are all for it. We also want them to receive help as well.
Yeah.
I don't know that anybody's got an accurate number, but I've heard anywhere from 50 to 80% of those who are buyers of sex and traffickers and things like that have some sort of sexual trauma even in their past.
Sure.
That doesn't justify anything. But it means that everybody in every scenario in this situation needs help.
Mm.
Some we feel more kind about the help that we give. Others we feel pretty strongly about. But we have programs where we have decoy ads that are posted, and we respond and intercept phone calls and get people's information. And it's in a database, and it can be retrieved and text or logged and things like that. So there are things that we do as well. We work, again, I referenced the Attorney General. We're incredibly blessed here in Georgia to have Senator Renee Unterman and a number of other folks that have been involved in this and have helped with us from a legislative perspective and have been tireless in addition to Director Keenan and the Attorney Generals and other folks. So, I mean, it's been a collective effort. No one person has done it. It's been this idea of it became such an issue that we all had to come together around it.
Wow. So I didn't know that Street Grace was actually that involved in digging into, we're going to help try and find these folks and stop this in the act of happening. How in the world did you, again, I know this circle background, but how did you become involved in this? What was your, journey? You told me a little bit before we began just that you had a background in business and then you were a professor, but how did you come to Street Grace?
Yeah, I think I referenced earlier the idea that this has always been something, and being able to help or serve folks who have been victimized by things like this has always been something that I had hoped an opportunity would occur. But interestingly enough, I was university president of a grad school here in Atlanta, and we would graduate, you know, 50, 65 master's level counselors every year in addition to other things that we were doing. We also had 7 or 8 counseling centers, and then we launched a mental health trauma center in Chattanooga and a mental health trauma center in Atlanta, and just kind of looked up one day, and we were doing 24, 25,000 sessions a year in addition to the education and the work that we were doing educating the next generation of counselors and licensed professional counselors and marriage and family therapists.
Sure.
I am not a mental health professional. I was just fortunate enough to be surrounded by lots of them that did really, really good work. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with what happens when somebody who has experienced trauma or confusion or any kind of an issue goes into a counseling room with a trusted, well-educated, and licensed professional counselor or marriage and family therapist, and the work that can occur when that kind of a level of trust and confidence and I guess the delicate nature of it all as you begin to share and dig deep on things. And in all of this, sexual trauma, sexual abuse, sex trafficking, and things like that kept bubbling to the top. Mm. Our students had a particular interest in it, in the trauma track and the sexual issues and sexual trauma that we had. And then we started sponsoring conferences, and we had professors that were far more capable to speak to the medical professional and other things than I was that would be out and about. And then one day, about 2 or 3 years ago, I was walking down the hallway and saw that we had a community time on campus, and it was somebody from a sex trafficking organization that was in talking. Hmm. And the short version is, I didn't have a lunch that day. That's interesting. Walked in the back of the classroom, stood up and listened because I was just going to listen for 10 or 15 minutes. Didn't move during the entire presentation. There was a Q&A at the end, and someone asked a question, and I don't even remember the question, but the answer was from the person that was leading the organization, is that they had just been a part of an undercover operation to offer resources for those that were wanted a way out of the life and to become free from this. Hmm. And in the course of doing that, after one of the operations that occurred, a trafficker was in the room and had been arrested, and he was sitting down and waiting for transportation to come to take him away. And the not-for-profit sat and talked to the guy and said, hey, I just heard them mention that you've been arrested 3 times for drug trafficking. Why, if that was going so well, would you do human trafficking now? Why would you do sex trafficking? Hmm. And the guy didn't miss a beat. He wasn't ugly. He wasn't mad. He wasn't angry. He just looked up at him and said, because I can sell a bag of drugs once, I can sell a 12-year-old girl 8 or 10 times a night. Oh. And when that happened, I almost feel it every time I kind of talk about it today. When that happened, something, it's like somebody just dumped a bucket of yuck on me. And I stood in the back of the room and I thought, I thought I was a good person because I thought and acted and talked like I cared about this. But what I was saying is, if I'm financially secure, if everything works out and goes my way and the timing's right, I hope that I get an opportunity to do something like this. And so I had to ask myself a question, what does that say about me? Mm. If that's the, you know, is this a PR campaign to make Bob a better guy, or is this real? And I went back to the hotel room that night. I couldn't shake it, called my wife about 10:30 at night. I'm laying there in the dark in a Marriott and everything's good. And I can't get this off my mind, thinking, I've got 3 kids, 2 of them are girls. Mm. If one of these was my kid, you know, I'm not a real formidable guy, but I'd be kicking down doors or doing whatever I could.
Yeah.
And somewhere in Atlanta and in Chattanooga, there could be a 13-year-old girl who's staring at a door, and I wonder if somebody's going to come through it. So I call my wife crying. I said, I think I'm having a midlife crisis. The fast forward, and a year and a half later, and I've got the opportunity to be the CEO of Street Grace and have resigned the university, and which is where I thought I would spend the rest of my life. And that was the greatest opportunity I've ever had, and now I can say it again. This is absolutely fantastic. It's the worst kind of work in the world, and it's the most fulfilling thing I've ever done. If somebody's got to do it and we've got to fight something like this, I'm honored to be able to be a part of it.
Wow. So, you know, hearing that, it just totally stops you in your tracks.
Yeah.
I have a daughter. I'm even beginning to grapple with that. I guess I'd ask this. People listening right now, first of all, a lot of them would sit and have the same response, but go, I have zero idea how I can get involved in this.
Yeah.
You know, how in the world, what practical thing could I begin to do to make a change here? And you know, I work full time and I'm busy, and we, you know, you look at most families and you go, we feel like we have zero time in our schedule, et cetera, but this is going on. What could we do? How do you respond to people that say we want to have some sort of a proactive stance? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think you, I think take a moment and let it all settle in and then just say, okay, given my life, my life circumstances, my career, my talents, and my giftings, what could I get involved in? What do I have to offer? And then the beautiful thing is Atlanta is rich with not-for-profits that are working in this space that do right. A wonderful, wonderful job. And if Street Grace isn't the thing for you, we're happy to get you connected with folks and organizations that are.
Sure.
But there are opportunities for, I mean, we're all not-for-profits. So we all, virtually all of us, certainly that don't accept federal funding, all of us survive and thrive and do what we do because of the donations that come in.
Sure.
And then there's opportunities to volunteer. If you're here in Metro Atlanta or in the state, one of the great first steps that you could take is February 20th. That's coming up in just a few weeks is the state's annual anti-sex trafficking lobby day.
Huh.
Last year was the largest one we ever had. We had more legislators come across the street from the Capitol to speak and present and talk to us. And then we had about 750 people that walked across the street to the Capitol. We all had our purple scarves and in a very friendly, warm and engaging way, we all walked across the street to visit our senators and representatives. We're able to watch as they did some work on our bill around trafficking at the time that we did that.
Yep.
And so it's a very comfortable lobby day. It's a friendly, you know, comfortable. And so it's a great way for folks to get involved, to hear what's going on at the state level and get a real quick immersion and education on where we are in the state in about a 2.5-3 hour window.
Hmm.
You can go to streetgrace.org. And it's streetgrace, G-R-A-C-E, .org. And the event is on there, and anyone can register, and it's open to the public and things like that.
And so is that the kind of a thing that would be appropriate or valuable to bring your kids to? I mean,
we will hear from a survivor. We will hear from law enforcement. We will hear from legislators. We will hear from our attorney general. It's a family. Obviously, the topic is heavy, but
sure.
It is a family, yeah. And we will have students that will come. We have schools that brings, you know, students in their class or in their grade level that are engaged in this as one of their justice issues and things mm-hmm. like that.
Okay. Well, that's really neat. So that'd be an interesting entry point just to become more aware of what's going on and also be just show that you're present and that
yeah.
you care about that. If you are in a community and you're, you know, you talk about you guys do education, I don't know specifically, if this is you, or if you just have recommendations, if a family wants to say we want to be educated in our community about what's going on, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, that would fall under our demand and end and outreach program, or either the youth initiatives with the schools and faith communities. So just reach out on the website again, mm-hmm. And if that happens to be an area that we're not going to be at in the near future, or we don't have resources to do, we'll connect you with some folks that do.
Yeah.
But that's not usually the problem.
Hmm.
We're usually able to accommodate and look forward to it.
Now that makes sense. And I guess one more question. So I'm just
sure.
Throwing them at you here, but there are people listening right now that whether it is, an actual, trafficking situation that they are in right now, or whether they're just, they know there's some sort of sexual abuse going on and they just feel silent in that. They don't know a practical step to take in that. What would you say to someone who understands and is aware that they're being victimized in some way, but they just have never felt like there's a way to speak out? What's the practical response that you guys would recommend?
Yeah. I think if you're a child or a minor, it would be to have faith and courage. And I know that's a easy thing to say and an incredibly difficult thing to do, but to reach out to a trusted adult, or law enforcement. If you're an adult, it would be the exact same thing. Reach out to a trusted adult or a friend or a coworker or peer that you trust, and or just reach out directly to law enforcement. And in any of those situations, feel free to reach out to us. We can you know, understand what your situation is and get you connected with the right people. And we do it all the time. That's one of the things that we're deeply engaged in is getting people connected to resources for help, especially since we don't do the restorative care work. We're more on the prevention, protection, and the pursuit. We've got a list of partners that we work with all around the state and, quite frankly, around the country that can be helpful and are. I would also say, I understand for people that are in that situation, it is just one of the most difficult things in the world. Yeah. One of the hardest things to do, and the reason that there are so few prosecutions that stick for traffickers is because guess who has to testify against them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The victims.
It's the people that they've victimized, that they've prostituted, that they've sold. And in all of those situations, I say, oh, that's too strong. The majority of those situations, one of the most challenging things that occurs is just the psychological battle and turmoil that causes the shame, the guilt, the fear, the anxiety, the threats, the dependency. It is not an uncommon thing at all for someone to ask for help or to escape the lifestyle that they've been ensnared in and then to immediately go right back to it because it's what they know and it's what they've become familiar with and it's the value that they think they have. And so it is just it's a very difficult process to navigate through. Mm. And I would just encourage anyone, and I know, in this day and age, if you've got, more than a few folks in the room at any point in time, you're talking to somebody who has experienced at least some level of sexual exploitation.
Yeah. Well, and what's become clear to me, and this is just a challenge every time that I think about it, and I just would extend this, even if you're someone who is not in that situation, I'm amazed how often, again, whether it's more of a systemic organized exploitation or it's someone in your family who's been abusive, right? It's everywhere around us.
Yeah.
And how often when that person seeks help, let's say that you're experiencing this from another family member, how often the family, because of shame that it would have happened, kind of shuts that down or tries to keep that quiet or says, the Lord says to forgive and forget and all this stuff. And I would not believe it if I hadn't seen it so often. And so I feel, that one of the challenges to me and anyone who's listening is that if you're told about something like this, to be the kind of person that says, I understand the system wants us to be quiet, but I'm not going to. I'm going to be a safe person to talk to, and I'm going to say it's not okay. And it doesn't matter if the rest of the family system or the rest of the system I'm a part of wants to shut that down. I think I'm amazed how often there is, just because of that cultural thing we talked about at the beginning, there's the culture of this is not something we talk about. It might have happened. It might have happened in our family, but we just act like it's not there. And that's, just a call to be vocal.
No, it is. You're exactly right. And I think it's an important call. And we will talk to people on a regular basis who, something may have happened in the home or with a family member. And you'll say, does your mother or does the father, have you spoken to them? And they say, oh, no, I've never done that. I would never say anything to them. And there's this idea of, I'm not sure they would believe me. I don't want to destroy the family. And so there's just, again, it's just riddled with psychological warfare and shame and guilt that are just kind of wrapped up in all of that. So the single most important thing that someone could do is to find a way and a place to speak out. Mm. But it's the single most difficult thing they could do as well.
Mm. All right, one last question for you. I think there's a lot of issues that we know are as old as time. I mean, sexual exploitation, you can just read the Bible in the Old Testament, take 5 minutes, and you see, this has been an issue that's existed forever, right? And there's a lot of evil that's existed that long, and yet there can tend to be a level of complacency then, of saying, it just is what it is. I hate that it exists. I wish it wasn't there. But let's be honest, it's going to be there, right? There's that feeling about it. As you're part of an organization that's seeking to truly change this dynamic, what is your actual real hope if you look 5 years down the road? What do you think? What can we actually do? I mean, do we have a chance to truly change the story here? What does that look like?
I am more hopeful now than I have been anywhere along the way. And I think the answer to that is yes, we have lots to be hopeful for. There is more good that is occurring. Understand the reality of is the more you shine the light on something, the more you're going to see of it. Hmm. But that doesn't mean that simultaneously more good isn't occurring. There's legislation that's being passed. Again, we talked earlier about the federal legislation. There's legislation that's being passed all around the country right now. Here in Georgia, we're looking at legislation again this year that does specific things that are critical. It targets the buyers of sex. Mm. If you stop, and that's our whole mantra for everything, is that we're not going to end this by chasing the problem around and trying to help people put the pieces back together. Mm. That's critical, and we absolutely have to have it. But we're only way that we'll end this is to attack the demand side. Mm. And that happens, like in July of 2017, the governor signed into law the first time in the state of Georgia, HB 341,
yeah,
which says that if you get arrested or caught for purchasing sex in Georgia now, you're going to spend a minimum of 24 hours in jail. Mm. Now, that doesn't sound like a long time, and it's not. But until July 1st, 2017, you didn't get a record. You didn't get a mugshot. Yeah. And so now you do. Mm. Now this is beginning to occur. That's the first step in a lot of steps to come. Mm. There's a national report card that's done by an organization called Shared Whore International out of D.C. And Georgia has progressed well, but we're still a B state. Mm. And we've got legislation right now, and Tennessee, just to the north of us, is an A state and the leading state, number one state in the country for their laws, legislation, awareness, and law enforcement around this. We have stuff right now that's being presented this session that if it passes and goes through like we feel like it will, it should move Georgia to an A state. Mm. So we're doing the right things. But this is a big, big issue, and it's going to take some time to catch up to it. In Georgia, we have some of the best restorative care and preventative type work being done anywhere in the nation. Wow. And if it's the best in the nation, it's by definition some of the best on the planet. Mm. And so it's a horrible space to be in, but it's a great time and a great place to be in it if you're all about bringing healing and restoration and helping to protect and give a voice to the people that are victimized by this.
Mm. Well, that's super encouraging. I really appreciate you just taking the time to talk about this and, again, shed more light on it. And I do also, just to say it again, this is the tip of the iceberg. And so Absolutely. If you hear this and you go, I didn't recognize what was going on, or I understood it, but I just never felt like I had a practical step to take, that you can go to streetgrace.org and find out more about how you can learn more. And from there, it seems like there's a whole lot of places that really anybody could plug in, depending on your situation. You don't have to have a ton of free time and availability to make a difference here. You could find a place that you can take a proactive stance. So anyway, that's very encouraging. And also, that the day that you're talking about, remind me of the date again. You said the day of
February 20th.
February 20th. So that's coming right up.
It is. It's the only anti-sex trafficking lobby day.
Wow. And so what would be the goal and participation in that? What are they hoping?
Go to Street Grace, register so that we know you're coming, can schedule the lunch. The idea is to show up. When you have 700, 800, 1,000 people show up while the legislators are in session,
yeah,
evaluating bills and legislation around this issue, and you have that many people walking through the Capitol wearing a purple scarf, which we'll provide, that's a loud voice.
Yeah.
And this is an election year.
Yeah.
It's a loud voice, and it's a critical time, and it's a non-threatening, easy way to get a quick education and to get immersed in this space and begin to understand what resonates with you and what you feel like you can do.
Okay, well, that's neat. We'll talk more about that in our programming as the day comes up. And again, just thank you for coming out. I appreciate it. And I just really appreciate understanding better the work you guys are doing and your personal passion for that. So appreciate your time.
Thanks, Chris. Thrilled to be here.